Hi, this is Gibbo, 003 from the top end. Don't believe those southerners. We only hide our MO10s in snake-infested swamps surrounded by man-eating crocs to keep the muggles away. And you're listening to GeoTalk.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to the record-breaking group Flipper & Co. We take a look at the Nokia N95 for geocaching, and we announce the winner of the iTunes comments competition. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to GeoTalk episode number 30. Here we are in the middle of June, and gee, it's wet and it's cold. And aren't the days very short? Well, the good news is that the winter solstice is only a few days away. I think it's around about the 21st or 22nd of June. So that means that those of us in the Southern Hemisphere, the days are going to get longer again. Hooray! So for those of you who have been itching to be able to go geocaching after work, well, it's not going to happen straight after the winter solstice, but at least the days will be getting longer, and hopefully by about late August or early September, we might be able to get a bit more daylight and actually enjoy the outdoors on a weeknight. Those of you in the Northern Hemisphere, I hope you're enjoying summertime. Hope your geocaching days are filled with many finds. For those of us in the Southern Hemisphere, we're pretty much stuck with our weekends. Now, a topic that's sweeping the world at the moment is the price of oil. And I'm sure that anyone who goes geocaching and gets into the car is probably thinking twice at the moment before they head off, or they're probably finding caches that are a little bit closer to home. I know in Sydney, the prices are around about the sort of $1.55 per litre for unleaded and about $1.85 for diesel. It's an extraordinary gap between the two at the moment. And unfortunately, I run a turbo diesel car, so I haven't been taking it out much. Must admit that I use public transport to go to work, so I'm noticing that a lot more people are using public transport in the last few weeks. But here's a question for you all. I mean, are you reconsidering how far you go geocaching or the amount of geocaching that you're doing at the moment with oil prices as high as they are and looking unlikely to head down? I mean, this is a serious thing. And for those people who like to do the numbers runs, be interested to hear whether or not you're toning down your geocaching adventures. Looking at the geocaching.com website from Groundspeak, just a few minor adjustments recently. One of them was that they've eliminated the space in the front of usernames. I'm not too sure why people would have a space in front of their username. Maybe they want it to be listed first, but they've been removed. So if you've had some problems, you probably worked it out by now. But one of the more interesting changes is they've gotten rid of the Yahoo Maps that appeared on each cache page, and now they're Google Maps. So pretty much they're using Google Maps everywhere now, and that's on the geocaching website. And hopefully in the next few episodes, we might speak to the geocaching.com.au developers, because there's been a few interesting changes to the Australian website, and we'll go over those in a few episodes down the track. And before we get into the GeoTalk trivia question for this particular episode, a big thank you to everyone who has purchased the GeoTalk GeoCoin, which has been on sale for a few weeks. Most of them are sold, but there are still quite a few available if you want to purchase them. And you can just go to the website at www.geotalkpodcast.com, and you can place in your order. For those who are outside Australia, I will be opening it up to everyone overseas as of the 1st of July. So I just, you know, sorry I've held them back, but I wanted to give all the local listeners a go at purchasing those coins first. And yeah, thank you very much to everyone who's contributed. And don't forget, at the end of this podcast, I'll be announcing the winner of a gold GeoCoin, GeoTalk GeoCoin, for the iTunes feedback competition. So that'll be at the end of the podcast. Also, at the end of the podcast is going to be the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question. Now, the question for this particular podcast is, how many 5-5 geocaches are there in Australia? So that's difficulty 5 to rain 5. The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Well, on this episode of GeoTalk, we're chatting to a pair of geocaches who are now part of geocaching folklore because they've reached a record. I'd like to welcome Mark and Gail to the podcast. Welcome on board.
Hi.
G'day, gang. How are you?
Now, first of all, not too sure who to direct the questions to, but how did you come up with your geocaching name and when did you start geocaching?
Well, Mark can answer that one.
Well, we got into geocaching in April of last year. We went to the motor show and have a bit of a squiz around, and Alex from, was it Maplands, the map shop here in Adelaide, had a display on GPS's, and I actually own an XL12 Garmin, and as we were going away to England in about 10 weeks' time, I asked him the question about how I can get it reconfigured to the Northern Hemisphere so we can sort of find our way around. And he said, no, what you need is one of these. And he showed us one of the new Nuvi 330s. And, oh, yeah, that's pretty neat. Then he said, have you ever heard of geocaching? We went, what? Never heard of it. So he gave us a website. And we said, yeah, okay, write it down. And didn't think anything of it till that night. And we got home and got on the site. And Gail said, oh, we need the coordinates for the house. So got the coordinates, put it in, and said there was a geocache 500 metres away. So here we were, 11 o'clock on a Sunday night, walking to try and find our first geocache. Couldn't find it, got within probably 5 feet of it and went, this is crazy, this is absolutely silly. But I went back next day and I found it, got home, waited for Gail, and said, I found it. So we went back and whoopee, we had a ball. But Gail's last name is, that's why we called it Flipper, because her last name is Dolphin. So that's how we got Flipper and Co. as her username.
And our Riverland members are my ex-sister-in-law, who are great mates. She lives in the Riverland. We visit quite often, and she's still a dolphin too. So there was the Flippers and Co. So the two girls are the Flippers and the Blakes are the Co's.
All right. So are you guys based in Adelaide, or are you up in the Riverland, Renmark area?
Mark and I, we signed the logs the A team. Louise and Peter signed the logs the R team. And when Kiri, which is Mark's son from Kangaroo Island, comes over, he's a KI kid. So we actually mention which members of which team is doing the cases. A lot of the time, there's all of us. A lot of the time, it's only me and Mark or Louise and Peter.
So what type of geocaching do you guys like getting into? Because, I mean, particularly in Adelaide, you've got a wide variety of caches to challenge you. Are you the urban types, or do you prefer getting out and hitting the trails and out in the bush?
I like to get out and hit the trails. My favourite statement is I've done more bushwalking in the last 12 months than I've done in my whole life.
Yeah.
If there's a box at the end of it, I'll walk the path. If there's not, I won't.
We've done some tricky ones. Like there's probably four within where we live that basically jump on your push bike and go to. And we've done some down Victor Harbour. I've had to go up to Port Pirie and Port Augusta for work. So I just happened to have a breakdown in the van on the side of the road. And, oh look, there's a geocache here. So I just sort of sign it.
What would be the chances of breaking down next to? I was going to say, what would be the chances of breaking down next to a geocache?
Oh, just so I could get this cache. Oh, look, I've had to stop here. Oh, look, there's a geocache. Let's do it.
He was working.
I was supposed to be working.
But having a stop.
Having a rest break.
Do you think geocaching has taken over your life? Do you do much else on the weekends?
Well, actually, I'm involved with a steam mob up in the Riverland, and I drive a 1920... traction engine up there on the weekends, on long weekends. But our obsession ratio for geocaching is something near enough 70% at the moment. So I'll let you work that one out. Yes, it has.
It does take us to interesting places. You become a sightseer in your own town.
What would be some of the most unique or interesting places that you've discovered since geocaching?
We actually talked about that earlier, and one of my favourites is called Shush, and it's in the Goodwood Library. Goodwood Public Library. So you've got to time your visit there, and then you have to go find the correct book, which we did, which we thought was quite good.
That was really interesting. I think the other one that really sticks out in my mind is a cache up on the linear part along the Torrens River called There's Nothing to See Here. And I rocked up there to do the cache, and in my log I said, yes, there was something to see here. There was a koala literally sitting on the cache. And I could actually, I could pat it and I could shake its hand. And I had to, you know, give it a gentle pat on the bum to get it to lift up off the cache. And, yeah, that was the one that really sticks out in my mind. It was a really good cache.
You're a brave man, and you've probably just caused a whole lot of overseas listeners now to think that they can do that to koalas, because normally they're quite savage, aren't they?
They can be,
yeah. This one was just so docile. You know, I could even tickle it under its chin. It just sat there and looked at me. And I only had my phone with me, so I took a couple of pictures of that. Then I realised, oh, hang on, why are the digital cameras in the car? So I walked back to get the camera and started walking back and thinking, oh, the koala was long gone. Nah, was still sitting there. And so I took some more pictures. And,
pictures on the log for that one.
So, yeah, that was really amazing. I got quite chuffed on that.
Now, one of the reasons why we're chatting to the both of you is that you as a team have set an Australian record, and that is for the most number of days geocaching, which probably explains your obsession factor. Tell us exactly how many days in a row did you go geocaching?
We did 222 days. And that started because I started looking at putting the things on our, you know, how you tweak up your account page. And I looked at some of the other people and they had these, that they pointed to the websites like, it's not about the numbers. Well, I think it was I looked in the first thing on it's not about the numbers, and I said, so the top American had done like 900 and something days in a row, and I said, that's over 3 years, they must be mad. So we decided we'd cache for a month, and we were going to start in August, which is what we did. I think we did 8 days, and then Mark actually got sick. He actually had his gallbladder out, so that's our longest gap was while he was sick, we didn't do any caches.
13 days.
13 days is our longest break. And so we decided to wait until it got warmer, and we started in November. And the plan was we'll just do November. Well, we did all of November, and then the Christmas crackers in the park, Christmas event here, we thought, oh, we'll just do one more, do the Christmas crackers, and that'll give us 32 days. And we're talking to Fredo and Posty Girl. And it's their fault, really, because they both said, oh, no, someone's got about 70 days. You might as well keep going. And I'm sure it was Fredo that said, you might as well keep going. So we figured, oh, well, another 30 days. Oh, yeah, we can do it. It's Christmas. We'll have a bit of it's daylight saving. We can do it.
So I said, okay, let's do 100 days and call it quits of that. Somehow we got to 100 days and we thought, let's see how far we can go.
And a few of the other teams who ran sort of egged us on that knew what we were up to. So,
It was good fun. But I tell you what, with doing the job that I do, is automotive air conditioning, and sort of working late, and sort of come home at 5 o'clock and try and find a case when it's getting dark. That's getting hard.
Yeah, the last few weeks have been really hard.
I was going to say, what were some of the big challenges? I mean, you just mentioned then that the length of the days obviously became a factor as we're heading almost...
in winter is the hardest part.
And we had, 8, 9, 10-plus days of 43 degrees?
No, we had 15.
15 days of 40-plus degree heat here.
Oh, I was a good
time. But we still managed to go out and find a... Okay, so.
they weren't so bad because we actually did some evening ones that were a bit cooler.
Mm-hmm.
One night we were actually trying to snare a new one out that was on one of the jetties down by the beach, and we thought there won't be anybody about. There were so many people out at 1 o'clock in the morning, it was ridiculous. So we went and found another close one. So that was our one for the day, even though we did it at I think it was about 1:45 in the morning. That was our one for that day.
Okay, so 222 caches. I mean, is there any reason why you decided that was it? Going to stop there?
We just like the numbers. We're getting married on the 8th of 8. So we, I guess, not numerologists, but just like numbers.
Stopping at 150, then bantered around, oh, let's do 200. And probably the last 3 weeks has been pretty tough because we've been working some fairly hard hours at work, and it's getting darker. And I just said to Gail with our 3 weeks, look, if we get the 222, that's enough for me. I need a break because, you know, I'm usually the one, the silly bunny who's going out and finding them. And when you start driving 20 kilometres just to go to snare one case, then drive 20 kilometres home again, and you don't get home till 6:30 or so, that's getting to be a very long day.
Yes, you had a couple of those. So, and we got together on our day 100 with the other guys, with Louise and Peter, up at Wakeree. They drove down from Loxton to meet us at Wakeree to get a case in Wakeree on our day 100. And then we just happened to be up there the other week when it was day 200, so we got together with them. And then because it was also the long weekend and we knew we were going to be there and they would be, we'd be there together, so we did the 222 with them as well. And plus Mark's son was over from Kangaroo Island, so he got to be part of the whole event too.
Well, you've set the benchmark, 222. How likely do you think it's going to be that someone's going to knock you off?
Discussion on this, and even with the what we call the casing gurus of Adelaide, Fredo and Skippy and a couple of the others, the only likelihood is if someone new started, and they'd have to be living in Adelaide, not out in the sticks anywhere.
And they'd have to be very, very dedicated. You know, if they get to 100 plus days and if they just miss a day, that's it, they're broke from their streak. I think our record is so safe. It is Australia and New Zealand record. I think it is safe for the short term, but down the track...
Oh, it's a benchmark for someone to aim for.
Yeah, I think it'll get beaten.
And if anyone is deciding that they're going to try and take you guys on, what advice would you give to them?
Plan your days.
And don't do the close to home ones. Save them.
For when it is either stinking hot or absolutely bucketing them with rain. The worst thing to do is, I've got to go do a cache. I know where there's one, but it's a 3K hike in and 3K hike out. No, do those first on nice days and leave. Probably have maybe 20 as backups. So if you've got to go out and do one in an emergency, you know exactly where it is. So that's my advice.
What was it like on day 223 when you actually didn't find a cache?
Yesterday. It was okay because I've had to pick Gail up from work and come home and organise tea and stuff like that. It felt good actually to sit back and not do one, but I did have an SMS from Skippy saying there's two new caches that are about 2 kilometres away, and I went, go for it, do it. I'll go and do them, but. It's going to be nice just to sit back for a week and go, I don't have to go find a cache. I'd like to, but it's just having that little break is going to be great. Otherwise, I think you'd get to the stage where, I'm not going to do any more, and I don't want to do that.
You mentioned earlier, Gail, that it's not about the numbers, but obviously all of us in some different way have a little milestone that we want to achieve or some benchmark we want to set. I mean, once you've settled down and had a bit of a rest from all that geocaching, what do you think your next milestone or next benchmark will be?
We were hoping to get to 1,000 before our wedding, which is on the 8th of the 8th, because that's, again, the next day that the team's all going to be together in one place when we know we're going to be in one spot. So we were planning on hopefully getting to 999 the day before the wedding and all going and finding a case on the day of our wedding.
Have you thought about making the wedding an event?
We are actually going to do a... down here in Adelaide, they do Port River Cruises with the Dolphins. And so we're actually going to publish an event for the Sunday after our wedding. We're getting married on the Friday. So on the Sunday, we're going to organise a Port River Dolphin Cruise. It fits in with the name, so...
Come spot the flippers with us.
Something like that. We're still working out what to call it.
All right, well, there's a free plug for you. Anyone in the Adelaide region on the 9th of August?
The 10th.
There's an event.
The 10th it will be.
On the 10th of August, there'll be an event cache there in the Adelaide region. Well, look, it's been great speaking to both of you, Mark and Gail. Look, congratulations once again on reaching 222 and all the best on your wedding in August. And on behalf of GeoTalk, thanks for joining us.
Hello, fellow geocachers. This is Caught at Work. You're listening to GeoTalk. Just thought I'd drop in and give you some information on a new game being run this year at www.cachinggames.com called the 2008 GeoSports Game. It's going to be run during August and September, and it's all about geocaching based on the disciplines found in the modern Olympic Games. Try your hand at equestrian, marathon, kayaking, basketball, sailing, triathlon, and many, many more. There are 30 different disciplines and related challenges to choose from during the game. Some will be easy, some will be tough, some may be impossible. This game does not require you to find a minimum number of caches, but does require you to reach but not exceed a target of 888 points. This year there are 10 prizes on offer, all 2008 Australian Geo coins. Yep, they're worth getting all sporty about. For more information, please go to www.cachinggames.com and follow the links to GeoSports.
One of the things that geocaches are looking for is that ultimate device, the ultimate GPS device. And over the last few years, particularly in the years that I've been geocaching, I've seen a lot of devices that are starting to incorporate the GPS chip and make it easier to find your way around. And recently, I was given the opportunity to trial out the Nokia N95. Now, I have to admit, this has been one of those gadgets that I've had my eye on for a long time, because when I upgraded my phone about 2 years ago, I did a lot of research and decided on getting the N80. Of course, once it arrived a week later, the N95 came onto the market, and it was basically the N80 with the GPS built in. And my first reaction was, "Doh!" So recently I got to trial one because they've just re-released it with 8 gigabytes of memory, and decided to give it a bit of a test run. Now, this is what I found. Okay, the first thing is it's a great in-car GPS. The GPS chip that's built into it allows you to actually side mount it. You can get a mount for your car and turn it on its side, and it gives you turn-by-turn directions. So you can actually navigate your way through streets, and it functions just like any other normal in-car GPS. Another good thing about the N95, it's got a really good screen. It's about a 2.6-inch screen, so it's fairly large, and it's actually good for surfing the web. I use my N80 to surf the internet, and although it's not too bad, it's not quite the experience that you could get with other mobile devices. But the N95 really gets there, and by changing the orientation of it, well, not the orientation, but actually the configuration of it, because it does slide two ways, you can get it to have a side view. So it's actually very good for surfing the web. It's a 3.5G connection, so it's 3G with HSDPA. So if you're in a 3G area, you're going to get lightning fast connectivity. And particularly if you're on Telstra's Next G network, in some areas at the moment, it gets up to about 14.4 megabits per second. And with Optus, I think you're up to about 7 megabits per second. So it is a fast device, and you can surf very quickly. And the other great thing about this is it's got a 3.5 millimeter audio jack, so you can actually plug in your own set of headphones. And if you're using your phone as an MP3 device, you can listen to music using your favorite set of headphones, particularly if you've got noise cancelling ones. So there are a couple of great bonuses about this phone. The other thing is it runs Geocaching Navigator from Trimble, which is this fantastic little program that you can use, particularly if you're geocaching on the fly. You've just decided, I've come out of a meeting or I've visited someone, gone to another city, what are the geocaches in my area? You use the GPS that's built in and then connect to the net via your HSDPA connection, and then you can use that to find the nearest geocaches in your area. Now, I trialed this out on two geocaches and actually found it was very good. And you can find a really good review about Geocaching Navigator from Trimble on both the Geocaching podcast. I'll give you a link to that episode where that appears, and also in Podcacher podcast. They did a bit of a review of it as well. So you can find out a little bit more information about the software from Trimble. Okay, the downside. First of all, the in-car navigation requires a subscription. The maps aren't preloaded onto the device, particularly if you want the turn-by-turn, and you're going to have to pay a monthly subscription fee. Also, the maps are downloaded over the HSDPA connection, so it can get quite expensive. And if you're not on a data plan or you're on a very minimal data plan, you're going to find your charges build up. Now, I thought that I had put on a bolt-on on my plan and got a little bit extra, but unfortunately I was on a 5 megabyte plan, and just from doing a little bit of turn-by-turn navigation and from downloading one podcast, I actually blew my limit out and got hit with an extra $90 bill, so be very careful of that. The other downside is the GPS is very slow to acquire the satellites. Unfortunately, it doesn't use the Surf chip, the Surf 3 chip, and it uses a fairly generic one, I think from Texas Instruments. People can correct me if I'm wrong. And it's located under the keypad. So if you do have this phone and you are wanting to use the GPS, if you're having trouble locking on to the satellites, and it does require 5 to start off for some reason, you need to make sure that the phone is slid open with the keypad exposed and you don't have your hand over the keypad. So there are a few downsides of the device. Overall, 2 years ago, this was a fantastic phone. And 2 years ago, I would have picked it up and bought it and probably used it as my geocaching device, particularly for those urban caches or in the city where there's not too many buildings. Unfortunately, there are many other devices coming out, and already from Nokia, most people now are going for the Navigator 6110 as their choice for geocaching. The other device, which of course we all know has just been announced recently, Apple's iPhone Generation 2, which will be available in Australia on the 11th of July. It's got built-in GPS as well, and it has a much larger screen. So the N95, unfortunately, at this point in time, thumbs down. But if you've got it, it's still a worthwhile tool for using geocaching, particularly when you find yourself wanting to do it on the spur of the moment. Well, it's time to have a look at some of the events that are occurring around the country. And you can tell when it's winter time, there aren't many events occurring. So the first one, on the 30th of June, there is the regular pub lunch, which is occurring on the balcony over in Adelaide on the 30th of June. On the 19th of July is the Winter Challenge 2008, which is being held in the Gymna State Forest, which is northwest of Brisbane. So if you're in that sort of Sunshine Coast hinterland or even out in the Brisbane area or maybe even south, head up to that event up there. On the 3rd of August is Meet the Wonder Stuff, an ADF, and that'll be meeting near Brisbane International Airport at the Southern Cross Memorial over there. And on the 16th of August is Caching in Geelong Get Together, which of course is down in Geelong, just southwest of Melbourne. So there's some geocaching events that are occurring. Don't forget, if you want to promote your own event, just record some audio and send it through to geotalk@mac.com. And looking into the GeoTalk mailbag, and don't forget, if you want to say hello or send out a cheerio or just give a bit of feedback, don't forget to send an email to geotalk@mac.com. First of all, we've got an email from Del Fife. They want to let us know that they've completed their first century, their first 100 caches were the first to find on Aqueduct Trail 3, which is GC1BCCB. They said they left home at 7:30 in the morning and they had the day off work. So they headed up into the hills. It was about 4 degrees outside. There was mist. It was really thick. When they located the first waypoint, they parked the car and set off, unfortunately, in the wrong direction. So they decided to trust the Garmin and not their own intuition. And so it turned out they headed out onto another road. And after a 2.25 kilometer walk, it's good to see that you're getting out there walking. And they finally arrived at GZ, and it was a quick search revealed the cache, and guess what? An unsigned logbook. If only I had the Tabernacle Choir in the background to sing Hallelujah for you. So that was their first ever FTF, well worth it out in the cold. And they wanted to thank Nutcache for the great walk and some great photo opportunities. So there you go. There's a milestone of 100. So congratulations on reaching that, I should say. Also got an email from Stealth Ninja Penguin, who wants to say, first of all, thank you for putting out GeoTalk. And they want to send out a cheerio to Nomad Penguin and hope she gets better soon. So our thoughts go out to you. Hopefully you're well and hopefully you're getting better. Now, also in the GeoTalk mailbag, we got a phone message here. I'm not too sure who it's from. Let's check it out.
Hello, this is Austin from Bograt. I'm of the very keen feeling that you should actually approach Tony Delroy on the ABC and talk to him about geocaching, maybe once a week, maybe on a Wednesday night or a Thursday night or something like that. And that would be really a very good thing to do. Yeah. So, love your broadcast.
And thank you for that phone message. Now, I also got one from Peagle Boy. Peagle Boy held an event down in Wollongong recently, and he sent some audio back. Unfortunately, it was a little bit garbled, a little bit hard to hear. Anyway, cheerio to Peagle Boy. Hope you're doing well and geocaching down in the Illawarra area there south of Sydney. Don't forget, if you want to send in some audio, give us a call on 02-800-50-GEO. That's 800-50-436. And just to let you know, please make sure that you speak clearly and slowly. Because that's one of the keys, and particularly over a mobile phone, because your messages can occasionally get a little bit garbled. So if you send in some audio, make sure you take your time with it. Well, now it's time to announce the winner of the GeoTalker Gold GeoCoin. Thank you very much to everyone who left a comment on the Australian iTunes store. You've helped lift the profile of the podcast, and I'm very grateful for that. So we had a number of people leave comments there. Let's roll the GeoTalk polyhedral dice to see who's won. And the number comes out, number 19. And the winner is Tilby. Tilby from the ACT. Congratulations. Thank you very much for everyone who left a comment, particularly Tilby. Tilby, you've got until the 30th of June to get in touch and send me an email to geotalk@mac.com, and we'll send that coin out to you in the post. Now, to everyone else who's outside of Australia, it's now your turn. The month of June, right through until episode 32. So you got till about mid to late July. Leave a comment on your local iTunes store. So whether in the US, New Zealand, the UK, or in Canada, or anywhere else, leave a comment in iTunes, and including those who have previously done so, and we'll put you into the draw for a gold GeoTalk GeoCoin. Now, before I finish up this particular episode and give you the answer to the trivia question, a big announcement. Over the next three podcasts, there's going to be a number of very cryptic and slightly deceiving clues that are going to be scattered throughout the podcast. So if you listen to episodes 31, 32, and 33, you're going to get some hear from some geocaches around the country, and they're going to give you some clues to help you find their geocaches hidden in different states. So listen out for that in the next podcast. Okay, so it's time for the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question for this particular episode. How many 5.5 geocaches are there in Australia? Well, the answer is 14. Now, you'll find one of them in Victoria, you'll find three in New South Wales, and you'll find five in both the states of Queensland and South Australia. So I think it says a little bit about those two states and how hard they like their geocaching. So come on, WA, Tasmania, Northern Territory and Canberra, time to pull your socks up and see if you can hide some 5.5s around the place. Well, that's all for this particular episode of GeoTalk. Until next time, safe geocaching.